Minor Swing by Django Reinhardt. That's music from the 1974 film La Comme Lucien. The screenplay was written by this year's winner of the Nobel Prize for Literature, Patrick Modiano. So the judges say that he won, this is their quote, for the art of memory with which he has evoked the most ungraspable human destinies and uncovered the life world of the occupation. That's the Nazi occupation of Paris. Patrick Modiano is a French writer. He isn't very well known here, but he has written over 20 books. Only a few of them has been translated into English, so I thought we should find out more about him. Phoebe Weston-Evans has studied his work, and actually she's in the process of translating one of his books into English, and she joins us now from Brisbane. Phoebe, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. Thanks very much.
Were you surprised that he turned out to be the Nobel laureate for literature this year?
Yes, I was pretty surprised. I think a lot of English-speaking readers were also surprised. I think he was amongst the favourites. I think he was fifth, according to the bookies.
Well, the bookies had him pegged at 10 to 1. I mean, 10 to 1 is
not
a favourite, is it? I mean, that's a long shot, 10 to 1.
He's a bit of a dark horse, it's true.
Yeah, I mean, if you'd put 50 bucks on Modiano to win, you'd be happy.
Yes. And also Horace Engdahl, one of the committee members, had been heard talking about only ever finding a real sense of liberty now in the writing of non-European writers. So I think at the last moment, a lot of people were going for either Murakami or the Kenyan writer, Guji Iwa Thiong'o. And so, yeah, Modiano was definitely a surprise.
So it's not as if he's unknown in France. He's won lots of prizes and so on. He won the Prix Goncourt back in 1978 and several other important prizes. What is his status? Is he a well-known name in France?
He's pretty much a household name and has been since the 70s. Although when I was living in Paris, I did still meet quite a few people who had heard of him but didn't really know what he did and hadn't read any of his work. But it is true, he's been awarded pretty much every prize that there is to have in France. And so I don't think the French would have been that surprised.
Okay. So what do we know about him? He's 69. He lives in Paris. I gather he's pretty private.
He is, yes. He's famously shy and reclusive and even a little bit inarticulate when he does do interviews. You will find a few interviews with him on YouTube and things, but he does stumble a bit with his words, not as he does in his writing. And yeah, he's known to keep himself to himself.
Well, his boyhood appears to be one of the key drivers of his fiction. He's born in 1945, just 4 weeks before the end of the war. So the war is part of the aftermath of the war affects him, and it really reached deep into his family. Can you just tell us about that?
Well, I suppose he was kind of in gestation during the occupation, and that is something that does come back and haunt his work a lot. And so his father is of Greek Jewish origin, and his mother was a Flemish actress, and they meet in Paris during the occupation in this very kind of shady time. And his father was Jewish but didn't wear the Star of David and was quite possibly involved in some black market dealing and hung around with the Gestapo. And so there's a lot of unknowns there that does have a slightly dark and unsettling history.
So his father's a shady and even menacing figure, is he?
Certainly is, yes.
Right.
And his childhood was spent mostly brought up by his maternal grandparents. His first language actually Flemish. And then he's passed around relatives and friends a bit, and he spends time in Biarritz and Annecy and does return to Paris. But his parents are quite absent, I guess. Yeah.
So the first novel, La Place de l'Étoile, comes out in 1968.
Yes.
What's that one about?
Well, it comes out, he's quite young. He's only 23 when that's published. And La Place de l'Étoile, the title is quite interesting because it's first of all, the geographically, is the area around the Arc de Triomphe at the top of the Champs-Élysées with all those roads coming off it, so it looks like a bit of a star. And it's also literally where the Jews would have to put the Star of David on their chest during the occupation to identify themselves. And so the title is inspired by this imagined scene where a German officer approaches a young man in Paris and says, "Where is the Place de l'Étoile?" And the young man doesn't understand it as a directions question, and he just points to that area on his chest.
Right.
And it's
Place de l'Étoile means, well, the square or the location of the star, the square of the star. So where does the star belong? Or where is the star's place? No, not the...
Yes.
Yeah, I see. It belongs on your chest, not where the Arc de Triomphe is.
And so it's a very interesting one in terms of translation and how to convey that double meaning.
Yes, I had trouble then, didn't I, Phoebe? I was thinking of you as the translator, thinking, no, he's making a hash of this.
Well, that one hasn't been translated into English yet.
Well, see, that's why. It's untranslatable. Yeah, I've just proved the point. Okay, so one of his more famous books is called Missing Persons. Take us through that. What's that about?
Well, it's just, Missing Person. Just the one person. And it's about this person who is the protagonist and who is missing in some ways. He's an amnesiac. And it starts with, he's employed as a private detective. And it starts with his boss taking his retirement. And so this protagonist decides that it's time to find out who he was, because he had this accident about 15 years previous to where the book starts. So he decides to go on this journey to find out who he was, and it takes him back into the kind of murky Paris under occupation era, although it's never very, very precise. None of his novels are very precise chronologically and temporally. And it turns out he was living in Paris. His name was Jimmy Pedro Stern, but he was living in Paris under an assumed identity, Pedro McAvoy. And he and a group of friends that he's involved with decide to flee Paris because it's becoming too oppressive. And they go up into the mountains. And from there, he and his girlfriend try to escape across the border into Switzerland. And it's during this, they pay a smuggler. And it's during this journey that they become separated. And then he's abandoned, and you're left with this strange figure just on the borders between two countries, identityless, and you don't really know what happens. He's just surrounded by snow.
But identityless and not knowing who he is.
Yes. Yeah, he comes to that. He does figure out that was his name and that's right. What he was doing.
What a fantastic premise. So a detective whose case is himself.
Yes, yeah, it's really good.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great.
So this period of the Nazi occupation of Paris, that just comes up again and again in his writing, I gather.
Yes, absolutely. It's a period that's never there are often narratives that are set either in the present day or more often the 60s or 70s, but there's always some kind of little loop back to that period. It's never far from his mind.
And that family history we were talking about, the absent parents and the menacing father, do they recur?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. And there's often a figure, there's often either physical features or items of clothing that recur and kind of resurface in different characters and different guises. But they're often kind of clues that person is a bit of his father or represents a bit of his mother or something like that. And if I could just read to you, there's a very telling quote in one of his books that also hasn't been translated to do with that occupation and his memory.
Sure.
It is from Livret de Famille, which was published in 1977. It is that my memory precedes my birth. I'm convinced, for example, that I have first-hand experience of Paris during the occupation, since I can recall certain characters from this time, together with some intimate and disturbing details which go unmentioned in the history books. And so it's quite interesting that he feels like he is from there in a sense.
And that he can tell you what was really going on.
Yes. And it's also to do with, you know, this history that doesn't get mentioned. And it's often, I think, easier for the French to have this idea that they were all the très bon résistants and they were together with the Jews and they didn't want to be, to collaborate and they didn't want the Vichy government. But I think, in fact, that it did actually suit a lot of people, and there was anti-Semitism was rife in France during that time, and so I think he's taken it upon himself to set it straight.
To tell the unpalatable truth.
Yeah, indeed. Mm.
Now, you're translating one of the works at the moment. Which one are you working on?
There's one called Accident Nocturne, which was published in 2003.
Which
is another tricky
which means
title.
What? Oh, okay.
Well, I think literally... a nocturnal accident. I think if it were to be translated that, it would have all kinds of connotations to bedwetting or something like that. And then it could be the incident in the nighttime, but that would have a lot of reference, I think, make people think of the curious dog, the curious incident of the dog in the nighttime. Yes, I'm maybe the listeners will have some suggestions of how to translate that title. I'm a little bit stuck.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, we'll put the call out to all the French speakers about how to translate Accident Nocturne. So, briefly, we've only got a couple of minutes left. What's it about? Yeah. Or, no, more importantly, what are the challenges you're facing? What are the challenges of rendering him into English in a way that feels truthful?
He is a very tricky writer to translate. I think his style is quite simple and kind of purified and crystalline, and in that way, it can be easy to not do it justice and not let it be so kind of fragile. And he does have there are some parts that are slightly kind of foreboding and unsettling, and I think it would be easy to overdo that and make it kind of more portentous and kind of heavy. And I think the challenge is to allow it to be mysterious and ethereal, but without being kind of fey or, I don't know, just to go too far in one direction.
There's a lot of fine judgment called for here. Isn't there? That's what you're saying.
But I think so. Just because, he can be extremely subtle and just little suggestions of things and allusions. And
have you met him?
No, I haven't met him.
We should go knock on his door.
Next time I'm in Paris.
Tell him what. Well, I think if you're his translator, you should at least say good day or bonjour.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if he would accept my call.
If he would answer the door. Yes. Well, Phoebe, thanks for talking to us. I'm sure you've whetted our appetite. I mean, people all over the world are going to be reading Patrick Modiano now that he's won the Nobel Prize for Literature. So thank you for your
Well, I think the only new publication out is Suspended Sentences. That's coming out soon.
Been good to talk to you.
Yeah, good to talk to you too. Thanks very much.
Phoebe Weston-Evans. She's a translator, and we'll look out for her translation of Patrick Modiano. But we need your help to tell us what we should call it, Accident Nocturne. And he's the 2014 Nobel Laureate for Literature. This is Books and Arts Daily on RN. I'm Michael Cathcart.